Welcome to the Golden Age of Cardboard podcast, where we remember a time when stacks of cards were held together with rubber bands and Mickey Mantles were put in bike spokes. We hope you will enjoy and reminisce as you come along with us as we tell stories about the baseball cards from the Golden Age of Baseball. We will examine the state of the vintage baseball card market and talk to some of the greatest collectors in the hobby. You won't be hearing us talk about any chrome or shiny cards here. Now, to take you on this retrospective journey, here's your host, direct from the shallow end of the gene pool, my son, Mike Moynihan.
Yo and hello everybody, and welcome to another awesome episode of the Golden Age of Cardboard podcast. I am sorry I did not do an episode last week, but I have a really, really good excuse. I was in Philadelphia and I went up last Tuesday, and 2 weeks ago I discussed a little bit about a collection that I was trying to work a deal on, and I ended up making the deal. And I went up to a friend of the show, John Keating, That 70s Card Show, to his house. We did the deal and we spent all day Tuesday looking through the collection. Another person who got in on it with us was Chris Sewell, who on YouTube is Baseball Collector Investor Dealer. And we're calling it the Grail Collection because there are so many cards that people would consider grails in their collection. That's why we dubbed it that name. And it has been a blast over the last week getting all the cards and then kind of sorting through them. And I'm sitting here sorting 1968 tops and putting them in a binder to start building a set for that. It was just an amazing experience, kind of one of those dream scenarios that all collectors would love to have the opportunity to do. And I was blessed to be able to partake in that. And so I apologize for no episode last week. But this week, I'm going to make up for it because I've got a guy on today as my guest that I consider a hobby friend. He and I have never met in person. He may correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think so. But we're kindred spirits because we both had our right shoulders operated on. He's had a few more than me. We may talk about that a little bit. I'm going to bring him on right now. And it is Mark Hoyle from Mark Hoyle's Impossible Dream. Hey, Mark.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm good. Welcome to the show.
Honored to be on here. I have to say, you're the first vintage card podcast that I listened to when I found all this stuff.
Oh, wow.
6 or 7 years ago, maybe, when it started.
I'm really sorry that I had to be. You learned quickly that there's better stuff out there, and I'm glad that you found that.
It's all good.
Thank you. I'm glad you found it. And we've been friends for a while, kind of on the periphery a little bit. We're friends. We have a lot of mutual friends, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, we do. Yes, yes.
And from afar, I have heard the legend of Mark Hoyle. I'm not going to lie to you.
There, then. Yeah.
Well, your hobby knowledge is well known, and that's what I'm hoping to bring to the table here. I'm excited that my audience gets to hear you talk about it. When were the first packs that you opened? Do you remember?
The ones I remember opening are 71. That's the first time I remember opening packs. But I have cards in my collection from 69 that I've had since I was a little kid. So I must have opened those packs. I just don't remember 69 and 70. I don't remember those.
Gotcha.
The place I got my cards was the only store in town, and my mother worked at the store. So I would go. I was obsessed with baseball as a 6 and 7 year old kid. So I was getting packs young. And then once her salesman knew that her kid collected cards, he would hand an extra box to her sometimes when he walked into the store.
Oh, wow.
And that continued all the way through college for me. Even after I was out of college, he still brought in cards. At that point, it was a set he would give to me. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a good memory. Good memory.
Did they ever give you vending boxes or anything, or just boxes? Boxes.
Just boxes with wax packs, and it wasn't just baseball. He did it for every sport. So you could open, hockey sets were 132 cards. You could easily get a set out of a box. I was all the other kids in school were jealous because I already had my set done. Christmas time, I'm done. Over with.
So people that don't know you, you're a Red Sox mega super ultimate. There's not a superlative that I could add to the front of collector to make it worthy of what you do in terms of Red Sox. Do you still have all those old cards that you, the hockey stuff and the weird?
I still do. I don't actively collect the other three sports. Occasionally somebody will hit me up. Hey, do you want some Bruins cards? I'll take them. I don't buy them anymore though. It's a space issue. As you probably know, you just can't do it. But I do have all the sets all through the 70s. I have football, I think 73 to 80, and that's about 71 to 80 for hockey. I had other partial sets, but I just unloaded stuff last year. I had to lighten the load here. It's just too much.
So what got you just going on the focus of Red Sox, everything Red Sox, everything you could get your hands on? What started that?
As a kid, I was a set collector, which probably most of us were in the 70s. There was one set to collect, and that's what you focused on. I never completely got out. I got married young. I had two boys. They were both into cards. We went to shows, so I would pick up stuff here and there. And then when I really got back into it, probably 2010, I was popping around one day on a Saturday afternoon. It was raining. I found all these blogs, and it's like, hey, there's other guys that are my age that collect cards. And they write about it. So I didn't know what a parallel was. There was all numbered cards. It was like all these different companies making cards. And it's like, I can't do this. I'm just going to collect Red Sox, which I had already kind of started doing. When I went to the shows with my sons, that's what I would buy is Red Sox stuff. Like my Yastrzemski rookie, I bought it for $20 in, you know, 1984 or something like that, you know. One of my Williams cards up there I bought for like $40 in 1985. So when I got back into it full time, I noticed other guys were just doing player collections or team collections. So I just started working backwards and filled in the blanks. And, you know, I went back. The earliest Sox set I have is 1906, the Fan Craze. And I buy the new stuff now. I just buy a team set. End of the year, I usually do the factory set. I decided last year that I'm not doing that anymore. I'm done buying it because those sit in that closet right there. They don't even get unboxed and they just sit there. So I just decided to do the Red Sox. And then once I kind of was, if I can't find a card, I'll buy a button. I have commemorative cups all over this room. I have bumper stickers. I have a 6-inch binder behind me with 2,000 different pocket schedules in it for Red Sox. So it's a fun chase. I call myself the Impossible Dream. That's one of the teams I collect, where there was 39 guys who played on that team, and I will collect anything from any one of those guys on any team they played on. So that's where I get to figure out some of these oddball sets, because I could be looking for a Don McMahon card with the Indians. So I'm digging into regional sets for the Indians. So then you just kind of remember all this stuff and you know, put it in your bank of knowledge. So
that was 60. That was the 67 team, right?
67 team. They were the team that turned it around.
Yeah.
They almost moved out of Boston 67. And
wow,
they turned it around. I do have some Boston Braves stuff too. Obviously I don't remember them here, but my dad, my uncles, cousins, you know, they talked about it. So I have a little bit of a connection to those guys. So I have some Spahn stuff, some Eddie Matthews, but it's mostly Red Sox, and it's a little bit of everything. I probably have, in this room I'm in right now, I probably have 800 pins on display where you can see at any time when you walk in here. They're just packed. The shelves are packed. So,
well, when we got the Grail collection, John Keating, who is a very good friend of yours, and I were hunting for something that you might need. And that was our impossible dream, was trying we were like,
well, I think he hit you up with, he sent me a message too, probably right after you. And it's like, I'm like, John, where are you? And I asked him for a couple cards I was looking for. There's a few guys I need, but they didn't happen to be in it. So, next time,
the next grill. We would have happily added them to your collection and would have been honored to find something that you needed. But it was so much fun, you know, as you know, just digging around and what's around the next corner. That's most of the fun of collecting, right? Is what can you possibly find? Right. And you just, so do you, when you go to a show, what's your strategy? Are you asking guys for particular cards? What Red Sox stuff do you have? How do you handle that?
There's a show here twice a year. It's a big Boston show. I know a lot of the dealers. A lot of times I have a deal worked out before I get there. I've already emailed these guys. I walk right in, go to the table, get my stuff. I have a small list. There's a few cards that I am looking for. Other than that, it's just whatever catches my eye. Because it's not just cards. It's press photos. I collect bumper stickers. As long as it's vintage, I'll grab it. So.
And you're in the area where you can find that stuff, right? Are you talking about the Fenway show that you go to twice a year? Or is it
there's a Fenway show, which is two or three times a year. Then there's a big show. Rich Altman, I don't know if he does them out near you too. He passed away, but he ran one in Boston. But, you know, there's if you grew up in New England, everybody saved everything here. So stuff's always popping up. Like I said, everybody saved everything. So I've never actually found anything on the job. I do construction for a living, and I'm hoping to find that box in the attic, but it have never happened. I found one boxing card from 1920. That's all I've ever found. But there's a good group of dealers around here that are local, and there's a lot of card shops, so I hit those up maybe once every other Friday. I walk in, and if he takes something in, a lot of times I get a phone call before he puts it out. So, do you need this? So it helps, you know. And as long as you're not kicking the tires all the time and beating the guy down, he's going to continue to do it. So I found some good stuff that way.
You know. Have you gone down the road of tickets, of game tickets?
Yes, I had. I started trying to get one ticket from every game in 1967. I'm at about 40 right now, plus the World Series tickets. I don't know if I'll complete that one. That's a hard task. I have a few tickets from the 75 series. I think my oldest one is just, I have one from the 46 World Series, but I'm trying to get one for each game in 67. Which
to me, is tough. To me, one of the most tragic things is that Ted Williams never won a World Series, right?
Right.
And as good of a player as he was, to not carry a team, he tried to in 46, right?
I think he was hurt during that series too, so he didn't even have a good series.
Right.
They had some good teams. They went down to the wire a couple other times with the Yankees, but they just couldn't get over the hump. Couldn't do it.
Yeah. Do you have Yankee toilet paper?
No, I don't. No Yankee toilet paper. No, but so, I do. Unfortunately, Sparky Lyle is one of the guys who played on 67 team. So I have a lot of Yankee Sparky Lyle stuff.
Good point.
It's not displayed, but I have it.
just to say you have it. Yeah. One of my favorite movies is the Red Sox movie. I just went totally blank on what it's called. Drew Barrymore and...
Yeah, I forgot the name of that too. Fever.
Oh my gosh. Fever Pitch is the name of it.
Yeah.
Love that movie. And you remind me of him, an older version of him, what his room would look like if he actually collected memorabilia. Yeah. Do you dress in Red Sox stuff every day to work or no?
No. Although the guys that work for me know I collect. So one of the guys went to the game opening day. I was going to go, but I had some family issues, and they did a ceremony for Tim Wakefield. So I went to work today, and that guy, he gave me the pin that he got at the game that everybody got. So a lot of the guys know I collect, so they pick up stuff if they go. Yeah. I'm not a guy who wears Red Sox shirts all the time. I mean, the shirt I have on now is from Hinchcliffe Stadium. It's a Negro League park in New York that just got remodeled. So it has a meaning to it. They raise some money with all these things.
That is awesome. I love how focused you are, and it doesn't mean you can't enjoy collecting if you're only collecting a team and you're at the 99th, you're 99% done. that last 1% is the impossible dream part, and it still gives you excitement for the hobby, or are you kind of bored with it?
No, because there's still new stuff, and there's always stuff turning up all the time. But like the other day, I watched you guys when you had your little show, and even though none of that stuff was stuff I would collect, it was fun to watch it. And I'm on Twitter, and I watch all the YouTube channels. I mean, I can see Satchel Paige. All you guys have those. Jackie Robinson, Mickey Mantle. And I enjoy watching what other guys collect. And it's, you know, I don't have the fear of missing out on that. I just know that's not what I do. And
yeah,
it's fun to watch other guys. Like, I'm happy for you guys. You got some killer cards. You got your Garrett card. The Babe Ruth got sold. It's fun to watch other guys get stuff to put into their collection. And I don't have to, there's no jealousy here. I have my stuff. You guys have your stuff. So
what I want people to hear that I'm hearing from you, the lesson there is to stay in your lane. If you have a collecting focus that you like, it's very easy to get taken up with what else is out there. But right. You've done a really good job of staying in your lane and saying, nope, this is what I'm focusing on. There's plenty of this out there. I can find it. And if I can't, it's okay. I'll just save up more money for the next thing, you know?
That's it. Before we were on this today, I was already trying to work out a deal for some Tris Speaker exhibit cards that I need. So that's in the works. We'll see what happens. But then, you know, I do fall off the wagon occasionally. Like, I bought this the other day. It's the Boston Bruins 71-45. but that was my team. I love
how you describe it as falling off the wagon.
Yeah, that was my team. As a kid, the Bruins owned Boston. So
okay.
And originally, this room I'm sitting in housed my music collection.
Okay.
So I that's either in storage right now, or I've already started to sell stuff off. But I probably had 15,000 different pieces of music at one point.
Wow.
And you don't need to do it. You don't need that anymore. You can just pop it on your phone. So I don't, you know, I'm going to keep a few things. I'm going to sell the rest. But
it's funny that collector mentality.
Yeah.
Regardless of the medium that you're applying it to, right? Records, comic books, Pokemon, sports memorabilia, sports cards, whatever. It's just either you have it or you don't, right? Beanie Babies, pick your thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. My wife wanted me to just get rid of the stuff. And it's like, honey, you don't understand. It might not be worth a lot of money, but it took me a lot of time to put all that collection together. And I'm not going to just throw it away. I'll give it away. I want somebody else to have it and listen to it, but I'm just not going to throw it away. It took a lot of work. It took a lot of work to do it.
It takes a lot of work to build it, and it takes a lot of work to get rid of it right. And at least you're thinking about it, and you're doing some of the work now on the records or on the music stuff. It's
part of I'm going to turn 61 in a month. So I'm on the downward part. So, you know, at some point in the next 15 years, some of this stuff has to go. So the records have to go first. But I mean, some of this other stuff, you know, I could probably travel the world. There's a lot of good vacations kicking around in this room eventually.
Right.
You know,
so. Exactly. Could you, do you have, is it where you might go, okay, I'm going to sell, because you've probably got multiples of different items, you know.
I do, yeah.
Be like, okay, I'll get rid of the stuff I have 12 of or 5 of or 2 of.
Yeah. I 2 weeks ago, I got asked to go to the Worcester Red Sox game and set up, not to sell, but just to show part of my collection. I want to have Red Sox memorabilia to see. I was one of like 6 guys that got invited to go to this. So I had to go buy cases to put my stuff in because I didn't have any of that. And now I was going to buy the case, do the show, and then return them. But it's like I have extra stuff now. So I'm thinking that my buddy also sets up. He runs his own show. I might try to start selling some of the extra stuff now. You know, I'd rather dump, you know, a bunch of cards, save up some money just to buy one new thing that I want and get the cards into somebody else's hands, you know. Just the extras, just the extra stuff. So
I totally get it. I finally got there, you know, myself, and have enjoyed it. And I'm not missing the stuff that I've been selling.
Now, once you started selling it, it became a little easier.
Oh yeah, totally.
I think once I sell the first couple things, then maybe, you know, the dike's going to break, and then I can, you know, makes it a little easier, I think.
We all have untouchable things.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And I certainly do. And I had to come to grips that me starting to alleviate myself of some of the excess and just stuff that wasn't as meaningful didn't make me any less of a collector.
Right.
It you know, I was downright a hoarder, right? I didn't sell anything. And then it's like, well, wait a second. I mean, because my original goal for selling was to buy a DeLong. Well,
right.
Problem solved with the Grail collection. And again, for those of you that haven't seen any of that on video, it's on YouTube. It's on my regular YouTube channel, Baseball Collector, shameless plug on my own channel for my other channel.
Go watch it. It's very cool.
Yeah. There's two things. One, just me talking to the guys that I did it with. And then we did a live stream where we showed a lot of different stuff. No way we could show it all, but that was probably top three hobby days in my life. You know,
what you did show was pretty damn impressive. So,
yeah, that, again, we just scratched it, man. We just scratched the surface of what was there.
That's very cool. I'm happy for all you guys. That's a big deal.
And you're spreading it around. So,
yeah.
One of my favorite parts about it was John getting to fill so many set needs that he loves, you know, and that was all he wanted out of, like, dude, just give me a bunch of cards. He ended up getting a ton of cards, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think he's happy with that arrangement.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, he started the ball rolling. So, you know, he's the important cog in the whole wheel. So
he's the critical cog in the whole wheel. Yes. None of it happens without John Keating.
Right.
And him having the foresight to go, hey, and it wasn't even that we were going to do the deal. He just wanted me to get the long. Like, hey, I want you to get this one card. Right. And then he's like, yeah, you know, the card shop owner, he's like, I think we could handle this better is basically how I'll say it as nice as I can. And turns out we could, and we are. So
worked out good.
Back to Red Sox craziness. What's great about the Red Sox, I think, and again, this is from a non-Red Sox guy, but as much as I hate the Yankees, I appreciate and respect what they have meant for the game. That can also be true. That's 100% true for the Red Sox, especially their incredibly long history. Certainly some dark decades, no doubt, but welcome to being a major league franchise. The only franchise that doesn't have that is the Yankees. Everybody else has. It's been a long, think about the Reds and the Indians and the, you know, I'm just thinking of long-term teams. They all go through periods of not success, but the Red Sox are, to me, baseball royalty. I've been to Fenway once. It is an absolute dump, and it is wonderful.
It is. It's the seating's really screwed up, but when you walk in the concourse and then walk up the steps to go to the field, I was talking about one of my workers went this weekend. It's just, you get goosebumps doing it every time. I've been there 200 times or more. It's just a feeling. It's an old ballpark squeezed into a city block. It's a great place to just go watch a game. It's fun.
One of the smartest decisions my wife and I made was the day of the game. That morning we did the tour.
That's cool. Yeah.
$12 for something cheap. Heck yeah, we'll do that. And so we did the tour, got to sit in the Williams seat, you know, the pesky pole, got up on top of the Green Monster, you know, and got to go up to that's right when those seats had been created, you know. So that was
I haven't been up there yet. I haven't sat there.
I only did it for the tour.
Right.
But going down into the bowels of the ballpark, and I mean, it's just, it smells terrible, and it's wonderful. It's like, but it's also a fragrant aroma of a ballpark. You know, it's this weird.
Like it. Yeah.
There's nothing like it. It's a absolute paradox that something that dilapidated, in a sense, is also quite wonderful and absolutely. I loved doing it. I loved being there.
I lost you. I can't hear you.
Sorry, I got you. I felt completely cramped in the seats, you know, and boxed in, and yet had the time of my life.
Some of the seats aren't even turned right, so that you don't even, you know, looking at the mound, you're looking at left field or right field.
Yes, and every ticket should have obstructed view on it, because dang near every seat's obstructed view. The pole in front of me was right on the pitcher's mound, so I couldn't see the pitcher at all.
I've sat in the same one probably. I was there for that wild card game a couple of years ago with the Yankees, Red Sox, and it felt like the place was going to fall down. It was just loud from first pitch, and the place is so damn old. The place felt like it was shaking. It was impressive. It was fun.
I remember the Red Sox had a sack. They were playing the A's or somebody, you know, neither team did I care about in terms of the actual game result, but the Red Sox hit a sack fly, and you'd have thought, I mean, the people were going nuts. And I'm like, in Texas, that would get like a golf clap, you know, like good job. There, they went ballistic. They scored a run and they were going nuts. And I just found that fascinating. Singing Sweet Caroline at the seventh inning stretch, all the things that make Fenway amazing.
Yeah, I think the fans, they're pretty knowledgeable type fans. I was there years ago, and I remember, and it was never announced, but Reggie Jackson was his last time he was going to be in Fenway. And everybody just kind of figured it out. And when he ran to right field at the end of the game, he got a standing ovation. And nobody said anything. The fans just knew it. They just knew it was going to happen. And it's a similar thing when Ricky Henderson played for us for 1 year. And he didn't start the first couple games. But then there was a game, maybe the third or fourth game of the year. Somebody got let off with a hit. And everybody in the stadium knew, okay, Ricky's coming out. Everybody knew it. And obviously he came out. It's a pinch run. And it's nice. Yeah, the place went crazy.
For a guy they used to hate and jeer.
Right. But, you know, they just figured it out. Hey, this is going to happen. He's really on our team now. And the place, you know, just little things like that. I mean, it's a fun place to go. Even if you sit next to a Yankee fan or a Met fan, it's still a fun place to go, you know.
So with all the stuff you've collected, I want to ask you a few trivia questions about your collection and see where you land on this. Who would you say are the top five Red Sox of all time based on what they did as a Red Sox?
Ted Williams.
Okay. Number one?
I think number one. Ortiz. It's either him or Yaz, but Ortiz, he just came through too many times in those World Series. Then I would go with Yaz. Pedro. He was just electric. He was much see TV anytime he pitched. Who do you lump in after that? There's a lot of guys. I like Jimmy Fox, but he spent more time with the A's than the Red Sox. But as far as my collecting goes, maybe Tris Speaker. I'll throw him in number five.
Okay. I was going to ask where Speaker fell in that. I think.
I mean, if you look, Speaker's got to be one of the top two dead ball era players, doesn't he? Or three, Wagner and Cobb and Speaker. You know?
Hornsby, maybe.
Yeah. In your war thing, how high is Speaker? He's got to be up there.
He's like five or six, third, right? Third or fourth.
Yeah.
In war per plate appearance, he's way up there, you know?
Yeah. So I would go with those five. It's tough to pin down to five.
It really, especially with the such long history, it's easy to pick the top five Rangers. They've only been around since 72, you know?
Yeah.
But okay. In your collection, what are the five, or I don't know if I want to even put a number on it, but your kind of favorite items, not necessarily most valuable, but stuff that you just go, I can't believe I own this.
I have a, I always pick this as number one. I have the 67 series was sponsored by Chrysler, and they gave out these little cars to scouts, front office, and one dealership in each city got one of them. I have one on the shelf from the World Series. So that's just a cool item. It's not a card. So if we stick with cards, my Williams rookie is probably right up there. I remember the day I bought it. I have a Cy Young Fan Craze, which is a very pretty card. I remember that day I got that. I don't know if you're familiar with the plaques, the Topps plaques. They came out in 68. They're actually little plastic things.
Okay.
The Topps put them out. But there's a checklist, and it's very rare, and it's very cool. They made one for the American League, one for the National League, so it's just loaded with guys. So that's one. And then I got to say my Jimmy Fox DeLong. It's not even a Red Sox guy, but it's one of my favorite cards. And I can change my mind as I look around the room. One of the other things I like is the Transigram cards that came on the little boxes.
Yep.
I have full boxes, the triples and the singles, but I actually have the store display, the Transigram, on my shelf over here, which I've only seen one other one. It has every guy on it. It's just the whole store display where you would pick those boxes up. So those are the top ones for today. If you talk to me tomorrow, I'd have a different vibe, probably.
I actually love that if I talked to you tomorrow, it would be different. when you have so much, how many, would you guess how many individual Red Sox items?
Oh my God.
Do you own? Do you track it? Do you
have
an inventory, or is it all up in your head?
Well, it's easier to figure out what I don't have than what I do have.
Sure.
So, I don't track it through the, a website or anything like that. I still have old handwritten notebooks. Some of them I've had since I was 12 years old. I still have those with handwritten checklists on them. But I don't track it. I don't do it. I can't even imagine what I have. Because I have, like I said, I have a 6-inch binder full of pocket schedules where there's probably at least 2,000 of them in there. I have probably 4 or 5 5-inch binders full of just team issue postcards from all different years back into the 30s. It's impossible to figure out what I have. It's mostly cards, but I have a little bit of everything.
How do you store all that? Do you have binders for all the cards? Do you put them in boxes? What do you do?
A little of both. I have a lot of binders. I have a lot of stuff on display. If I spun this around, I have a lot of stuff out.
360-degree Red Sox, right?
It is. Maybe at the end I'll spin it around.
Okay.
I do have a bunch. I have a closet over here that's filled with just boxes. Those are mostly the complete sets that I don't even look at. And then I have the shoe boxes full of, I put them in card savers by team, by year. And most of the stuff that's in the binders is actually most of the oddball type stuff. I actually enjoy stuff that's different sizes. Okay. I have a pile right here that's all different pages for all the different stuff. And I enjoy actually putting in stuff that's weird sizes. Anybody can buy a regular card, but
right.
You put a red man in one thing, you put the highest root beer with the tab on another thing. I might be the least OCD collector that you'll know. Because all my binders look different. I don't have PSA just like you. I have everything in here. It's all mixed and matched, and that's just how I like it. It's
the ultimate different. Frankenstein. The ultimate Frankenstein collection.
Yeah. I don't mind that at all. And it's opposite. During the day, I run my own business. I'm very organized, and I'm the complete opposite than I am with this. And maybe that's for a reason. I can just relax and let it flow and just do what I want to do.
And that makes sense. I mean, if you're stressed out or not stressed out, but just focused on being, you have to stay organized at work. You have to be very particular and precise. That's an area of your life you can, like you said, let it go.
Yeah. I have a lot of stuff displayed, but I move it around. If I get something new that's cool, I'll add it and I'll take something off. And my room's in flux right now because I have an old turntable over here that's going to go, and I got to put a glass cabinet. I don't know if I'm going to build it or just buy one, but so I'm going to add a few more things. I've pretty much maxed out the space that I have. So I only have, this room's only 10 by 12. So.
What's the admission charge to see the room? Cause I know John Keating really wants to come to see the room. So
he has an invitation to come up. Mike from Junk Wax, he has an invitation to come down. We don't really live that far apart. There's been a few guys that have come over. And what I want to do, I want to get like a, there's like a Norman Rockwell poster that has like Ted Williams on it. I want to get that, and everybody who comes just signs it. But there's already been three or four people in, and they didn't do it, so I'll have to figure out how to get that. But if anybody's in the Boston area, hit me up. I will bring you over.
All right, let me ask you this. I'm trying to think the connection between vintage and modern. So the modern stuff that comes out that's either reprints or a Topps card that shows Ted Williams in 2023, mm-hmm. From his old days, or even the stuff that came out, the Upper Deck stuff that came out with Ted Williams, like, do you go get that stuff too? Or is it, it's got to be from the era in which the player played. How do you feel about
that? I did buy the Ted Williams stuff because I just thought that was pretty unique. If I will put together my team set still, and if that Ted Williams card is part of just the regular set, I include it. I don't chase it. A lot of times people send it to me, so I have it. I do the flagship. I buy a team set, archives, stadium, club, and heritage.
Okay.
And on all the other stuff, I'll just pick off a card or two here or there. And usually by the end of the year, I end up with all the sets anyway for people sending me stuff. Because I mail out stuff all the time to buddies of mine, and they just mail stuff to me. So, and if I have extra Red Sox stuff, what I used to do is I used to bring it to my grandson's Little League game and give the cards away to kids on the team. And they thought that was cool as hell. Even if it's junk wax to us, it's still a 30-year-old card to them. So,
yeah.
So I don't chase non-playing days cards of the guys I collect. But I say that, I end up with a lot of them anyway.
Right.
It's fine.
I look around my room here, and I've got Ted Williams back there leaning against the Green Monster, a signed lithograph. I've got Kari Yastrzemski right here. I've got Ted Williams right here. Here, I'll pull this off the wall. Let's see. Well, maybe not. It's stuck there pretty good. It's the old Upper Deck All-Star Heroes Fan Fest. It's the 8x10 or 8x10,
yep.
Whatever it is, signed by Williams. Like, I love Ted Williams. I think he was amazing. I think speaker and obviously Cy Young played for him. Ruth played for him. You know, there's so many amazing. Yastrzemski was, I think Yastrzemski's one of those guys that I think more people collect Yastrzemski out of the, you know, I think Mantle and Yastrzemski might be the, maybe Mays, but Yastrzemski is highly collected.
He is. He's very highly collected. I have a Nolan Ryan plate up on the wall. Just because I do. I have a Mantle one up on the wall. I have a Babe Ruth one, just the plates.
Sure.
So, I mean, I like baseball history too. My collection isn't just all Red Sox. Like I said, I do some Braves and I just do New England baseball in general. So I have a bunch of Cape Cod League baseball stuff. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh yeah.
I go down there every summer and watch games. So I have hats for those guys. I have all the programs. They put out cards, rosters. I've been to the All-Star game. I just got, there's a game ball from a Cape game right here that I got years ago. So I have stuff like that. And I collect guys who are from New England, even if they didn't play for the Red Sox. So I'll do some stuff like that. I got to keep adding to it. You know, there's certain sets that don't have any Red Sox player in it. And I will find a reason to find a guy, you know, I'll pick off a Cincinnati Red set because Bill Werber played for them and he played for the Red Sox in the 30s. So I'll grab, has some kind of connection to it.
Yeah. It's like, there's never an end, right?
No.
And I've been thinking about that a lot. Like, what's the end? And I have this, you know, master checklist of things. And I'm sure that if I got ever to the end of it, which is not likely, hell, I'm selling some cards from the Grail collection that are on that list because I can't afford to keep them.
You can't do it all at once. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so it's this never-ending search, which we all love about the hobby. That's kind of the whole point. And then the people, right? I mean, you mentioned earlier, once you found people that wrote about the hobby and then you started getting into YouTube and Twitter and different social media outlets, how did that expand like your view of the hobby when you started getting into that stuff?
Well, I mean, the first thing that hit me was like I said, there's guys my age that do this and they're really into it. Not just into baseball, but I think the relationships I've built through social media, YouTube, Twitter, I'm a member of Sabre as well. And I found that organization through Twitter, and I've been to some of those events. I go to Cooperstown every year. There's a group of us that go, and we just met on Twitter. Just 2 years ago, we had 22 people just show up. Some of them I had never met before. Now I trade with them. I talk on the phone. A couple of guys are going to stay at the house, and we're going to meet here and travel out. That's the fun part, is meeting people. And if, you know, giving cards to people to complete a set or just to help somebody out. I have stuff here that's got to get mailed up and go out soon. That's the fun part. You know,
it totally
you go to
is
a show and you buy stuff because, you know, other guys need it, you know,
right.
You know, send them a text. Do you need this? That's the fun part, I think, you know,
yeah.
You find out what other guys collect. That's what it's all about. The camaraderie, the search, the friendship, you know, it's well worth it.
The one time I've only been to Cooperstown once, which is crazy for a guy who loves the Hall of Fame as much as I do and everything associated with it. But we flew into Boston and we drove the Mass Turnpike all the way out.
Yep.
Took that straight west and then kind of went up. It was gorgeous. Absolutely yeah. Gorgeous. I couldn't believe how once yeah. We got out into the country, so to speak, in the countryside, it was breathtaking.
It's a nice ride, and I can get there in 4 hours. I have a funny story. Like my wife and I, we always used to go to the Cape Memorial Day weekend. And one year we decided not to go. And I said, let's go to Cooperstown. She had no idea what it was. I said, it's in New York. You'll love it. So we hop on the Pike and we start driving. And she goes, I thought we were going to New York. She's thinking New York City. I go, no. We're going to the New York that looks like Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont. And I already had it all set up. I did all baseball. It was a Hall of Fame Day weekend, not the induction, but when they go, they play the game and they raise money for the Players Association or retired guys. And I had it all set up. I had a winery for her. I had everything set up. She had a blast.
Yeah. And my wife, Julie says that of all the places she would go back to Cooperstown first.
Yeah. There's plenty to do besides baseball there.
There is.
And it's beautiful lake. You can take a boat ride. It's beautiful.
Yeah. All of that, the winery, the brewery, there's just so much to do. And we stayed at one of the bed and breakfasts that were there. The Cooperstown Inn is what it's called where we stayed. And she would sit and sip coffee and I'd go to the Hall of Fame right when they opened, you know, during the summer. Yep. They're open extended hours and no one was there. And I would leave in the middle of the day and she and I would go toot around and piddle. And then I'd go back at night when no one else was there. And
yeah, there's some nice restaurants there.
It wasn't
even a bad thing. She said, I get to pick where we stay. So we stayed at the Otisaga, which is the place in town.
Oh yeah. And
the cool thing was we're checking in and the guy right in front of me, I'm looking at him like, I know who the hell that is. It was Alan Trammell right in front of me. I look behind me, Trevor Hoffman standing right behind me. I go get a coffee and go to sit down. Raleigh Fingers is sitting there. I had to ask, can I sit next to you? And, you know, we sat and talked for 5 minutes. But you walked around that hotel all day long. Goose Gossage was in the elevator with us. My wife said, who's that guy? Tim Raines. It was just loaded with people. And, you know, it was fun. They're just normal guys in there. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The whole town's magical anyway. It's just, I mean, I go every year. She goes, the hall doesn't change that much. I'm going, but you still get to go look at baseball stuff.
I was there for 4 days and I didn't see even close to everything.
Yeah.
I thought about going back this year for Beltre's induction because he's one of my guys.
Yep.
He was a Red Sox too.
I can't believe we let him go 1 year. Yeah. I love the guy.
And he came to us and cemented his Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
So, but there's just, it's a magical place. I can't wait to go back someday. I want to go back, but I'm jealous you get to go, that you decide to go every year.
Yeah. We make a point. It's always just guys we've met, guys or girls that we've met on social media. One cool thing we do is we rent a room at one of the hotels, and everybody picks up a box of junk wax, and we just pass packs around. And I end up with all the Red Sox cards, but you know, we bet on like who's going to get the. We pick one guy to see who gets picked the most. I think it was Ripken this year. Whoever got the most Ripkens got like we had a little door prize, but it's just for laughs, and you're opening junk wax, having a few beers and having pizza. It's fun.
Someday in I think 2142, they're going to run out of junk wax, and
yeah,
there will be no more.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for sharing part of your story and coming on and just talking hobby with me. I really appreciate it. And it's been a long time coming. And we finally.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about shoulder surgery before we talked about cards.
So, that's true. That's true. But really appreciate you. Your knowledge is amazing. I know you don't do content, but someday we're going to try to get you to do it. Well,
I mean, you can see I have Mark Coyle's Impossible Dream. So that's a start. At least I have a name.
Right.
I keep saying I'm going to do this. And I want to, if I do it, I want to have it scheduled. So I do it. And I have 6 kids. I have 8 grandkids. So my life is constantly changing. And I'm self-employed. My days could be 8 hours long. They could be 12 hours long. So I think within the next 6 months, you'll see me on YouTube.
Well, that would be a good day. Count me as one of your first subscribers. I'll be there. All right. And thanks again, Mark. And everybody, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. I'll be in Strongsville this weekend. So I hope to give a report next week's episode to be a report of that and maybe have some guys that were there. But will you be at Strongsville, Mark?
I won't. No. The big there show here the weekend talks. After that. I'll have a big show in Boston the week after Strongsville. But if you guys are going to go live and stuff, I'm glad I'm going to watch it. You know, I'm sure
we'll be doing something. But thanks again, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. And keep collecting. See ya.